Blog Talk Radio.
The problem of spiritual and moral life
relationships don't work between black people. Racism, white supremacy is the reason.
Absolutely.
Can't get a job in the hood and you educated. Racism, white supremacy.
Absolutely.
Can't get an education in the hood because it's expensive. Racism, white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Poor education in the hood you live in. Racism, white supremacy.
Absolutely.
You live next to poor people who will rob your ass, steal and kill your ass because they don't have no options and they don't have no option to critically think. Racism, white supremacy.
Yeah.
And I see that that's a problem. So I wanted to just make a pimp decision.
$1 trillion flow. From L.A. to Miami. Minnesota to Detroit. Chicago. Alabama.
Look at somebody. I'm in the $1 billion flow on my child. I'm in the $1 billion flow in my business. I'm in the $1 billion flow. Why don't you get in the flow of the billionaire? The trillionaire.
Enlarged material power spelled in large peril. If that is not the growth of the soul, our man's nature subjugates the within. The dark storm clouds begin to form in the world. The problem of spiritual and moral lag, which constitutes modern man's dilemma, problems which grow out of man's ethical infantilism. Each of these problems, while appearing to be separate, I refer to racial injustice, poverty, and war. The first problem that I would like to mention is racial injustice. The struggle to eliminate of our time. The present upsurge of the Negro people of the United States rose out of a deep and passionate determination to make freedom and equality a reality. The civil rights movement in the United States is a special American phenomenon which must be understood in the light of American history and dealt with in terms of the American situation. On another more important level, what is happening in the United States today is a relatively small part of a world development. We live in a day, says the philosopher Albert Einstein. Major turning point in history, where the presuppositions on which society is structured are being analyzed, sharply challenged, and profoundly changed. The realization of an idea whose time has come, to use Victor Hugo's phrase, the deep rumbling of discontent that we hear today is the thunder of the rising masses are singing in the words of our freedom song, ain't gonna let nobody turn us around.
Tonight is the figure of a vote. We got to turn some things around. I'm praying for you and you tonight. This is Dr. King talking about where we should be at in 2023, going into 2024. Don't forget, if you got a need, you plant a seed, go to my website, theseedofabrahamyosite.com. I'm praying for you and you tonight. Whatever you're going through, God is able to carry you through. We interrupt. For you and you tonight, and I'm praying for you to know that every level in yourself, I claim healing tonight. I claim the anointing for you. Wherever you at, God is there. I'm praying for the ones that lost loved ones because so much of evil, people killing people, because that's the spirit of Abaddon, the death spirit. Abaddon, but you got go around, you can't touch them because people got evil thoughts on their mind. But once you stand up, Ashe, our ancestor, the ancestor gonna come and open up that door for you. where you might go to the next level. Again, you talk about where we, I want you to be a strong man, a strong woman, to know that God will open up that door for you. I'm praying for you, Henrietta. I'm praying for you, Lisa. I'm praying for you that those that are called, those and I want to tell you, get ready for a breakthrough. I decree them that want homes, them that want new jobs, them that are able to move to the next level. And God is tonight, all is well. That means that whatever you need, God got what you need. God got what you want, but you got to get into it. You got to name it, claim it, and say it's mine. And write that demon spirit, that spirit of cancer, high blood, strokes, tumors, that's all around you, cataracts. I claim your healing tonight. In the name of the Almighty God, glory, hallelujah, I claim your healing from the east to the west to the north coast. I'm talking about in Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, all over America, even over in Africa. I'm praying for your breakthrough. And all you got to lift your hand and say, overflow. And God's going to give you the overflow. And you must die and get the hell of that. And I want you to stand tall and know God. Look at what I got. He's what the devil got. How much evil God got you and the ancestor. Ashe, our ancestor, east, west, north, and south. Our ancestor come to give you the finance that you need, to give you the healing that you need, to give you the joy that you need, to give you the love that you need. And I move all that negative energy that been sent. I sent it back on the floor. I sent it in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, and I want you to be able to say, I send every evil spirit that come in my mind, I send it back. And I want God to protect my family and my children. Ashe. So the ancestors on the move, but you don't call them. How did they come? Our ancestors. Ashe, our ancestors. Ashe, our business. Ashe. Those that are trying to do evil, they're going to fall and they're going to die and go to hell where they come from. So tonight, I'm going to bring you and even you to come. Hallelujah. God, we come at this hour to move every evil spirit, those demons, those witches, those warlocks, those that want to do evil to our people. We call on Michael, Raphael, Bobby, Archangel of the Church. We call on God of the whole universe, God that brought this world into existence. We call on you tonight to heal and deliver. Break down that alcohol demon, that demon of pills. Those that pardon know the devil got his hand on them. He wants to destroy your son. He wants to destroy you. But then you lose your heart of man. Come this far.
All over the world like a people. The freedom movement is spreading in the widest liberation in history. The great masses of people are determined to end the exploitation of their races and their land. I would also like to say just a word about many of the verses that have been I have traveled in many lands and many places over the world. Very seldom, if ever, have I found people more friendly than the people of Norway. And we will long remember all the criticism standing and your great friendliness. And I particularly want to thank the especially Mr. John for the eloquent words that he uttered yesterday at the ceremony yesterday evening at the banner. I can assure you that all of these referendums are of inestimable value for the continuance of my humble efforts to make brotherhood, freedom and justice realities in the United States of America. This evening, I would like to thank millions of lawful beings to discuss what appears to me to be the most pressing problem confronting mankind today. Modern man has brought the whole world an awe-inspiring culture. He has reached scientific success. He has produced machines that think, and instruments that appear to the unfathomable dreams of space. He has built gigantic bridges to span the sea. And gargantuan buildings to kiss the sky. His airplanes and spaceships have dwarfed distance, placed time in pain, and carved the highways through the stratosphere. This is a modern man's scientific and technological progress. Yet in spite of these spectacular strides and science and still unlimited ones, that is a sort of poverty of spirit, which stands in glaring contrast with our scientific and technological abundance. The richer we have become materially, the poorer we have become morally and spiritually. We have learned to fly the air like birds and swim the sea like fish. But we have not learned the simple art of living together properly. Every man lives in two realms, the internal and the external. The internal is that realm of spiritual ends expressed in art, literature, morals, and religion. The external is that complex of devices, techniques, mechanisms, and instrumentalities by means of which we live. Our problem today is that we have allowed the internal to grow on the external. We have allowed the means by which we live to outdistance the end for which we live. So much of modern life can be summarized in that arresting dictum of the fourth row. Improve the means to an improved end. This is a serious predicament. Modern man, our moral and spiritual lives must be illuminated. Enlarged material cosmos will be enlarged in health. That is not our purpose that grows the soul. When we're the soul, subjugates the awareness. Dark storm clouds begin to form in the world. The problem of spiritual and moral lack, which constitutes modern man's genius, is to present itself in the ecological problem, which grow out of man's ethical empire. Each of these problems, while appearing to be separate, I refer to racism, poverty, and war. The first problem that I would like to mention. Supreme Court's decision of 1954, outlawing segregation in the public schools. The court decreed that separate facilities are inherently unequal, and that to segregate the child on the basis of his race is to deny that child equal protection of the law. This decision came as a great life to millions of disinherited people. Then came that glowing day a few months ago, when a strong civil rights bill became the law of the land. This bill, which was first recommended and promoted by President Kennedy, was passed
about changing the world. COVID-21 has changed. The people have changed. All over the world, people have changed in Chicago, Detroit, California.
And that's what I'm talking about. Not only the education change, but the change of men and women, and then that change coming quick
and in so, take notice. Psalm 119, read it seven times.
Let me say it again. 119. Read it seven times, you might get angels and ancestors
will give you knowledge
that you can get out of the book.
So you read that,
you will see change that's happening right before your eyes.
To fly the air like birds and swim the sea like fish. But we have not learned the simple art of living together as brothers. Every man lives in two realms, the internal and the external. The internal is that realm of spiritual ends expressed in art, literature, morals, and religion. The external is that complex of devices, techniques, mechanisms, and instrumentalities by means of which we live. Our problem today is that we have allowed the internal to become lost in the external.
We have forgotten to love. Our churches have turned it back, and they have went to another level.
God made man. But we have pulled that out. So we're in a vacuum of evil, and only a few break out. And I just want you to be the few that break out. Well, this message I can give in Oslo is talking about what's happening in 2023 and what's happening to us today, right now, in your home, in your province.
I have traveled in many lands and many places over the world, but very seldom, if ever, have I found people more friendly. Than the people of Norway. We will long remember all the criticism and then the especially Miss John Paul, the eloquent words that he uttered yesterday at the ceremony yesterday evening at the banquet. I can assure you that all of these expressions of support are of inestimable value for the continuance of my humble effort to make brotherhood, freedom and justice realities in the United States. This evening I would like to use this lawful day and this historical to discuss what appears to me to be the most pressing problem confronting mankind today. Modern man has brought the whole world to an awe-inspiring threshold of the future. He has reached an astonishing scientific success. He has produced machines that think, and instruments of fear into the unfathomable realms of stellar space. He has built gigantic bridges to span the sea, and gargantuan buildings to kiss the sky. His airplanes and spaceships have dwarfed distance, placed time in chain, and carved the highways through the stratosphere. This is the dazzling picture of modern man's scientific and technological progress. Yet, in spite of these spectacular strides in science and technology, and still unlimited ones to come, something basic is missing. That is the sort of poverty of the spirit, which stands in glaring contrast to our scientific and technological. The richer we have become materially, the further we have become morally and spiritually. We have learned to fly our lives like birds and when we think like this. We have not learned to so far from this living together across. Every man lives in two realms, the internal and the external. The internal is that madness of spirit and age to express all literature, law, and religion. The external is the complex of devices, technically mechanism and instrumentality, by means of which we live. Our problem today is that we have allowed the internal to become law of the external. We have allowed the means by which we live to outdistance the internal of the so much of modern life we see summarized in the arithmetic picture of the corporate role. Improved the means of an unimproved form. It's a serious predicament, the deep and haunting problem confronting modern man. If we are to survive today, our moral and spiritual lives must be eliminated. Enlarged material power spelled in large peril. If that is not proportionate growth of soul, when the without man nature subjugating people in the end, dark storm clouds form in the world. The proper spiritual in the world has expresses itself in three larger problems, which grow out of man's ethical imbalance. Each of these problems, while appearing to be separate and isolated, is inextricably bound to the other. I refer to racial injustice, poverty, and war. The first problem that I would like to mention is racial injustice. The struggle to eliminate the evil of racial injustice constitutes one of the major struggles of the present upsurge of the Negro people of the United States grows out of a deep and passionate determination to make freedom and equality a reality here and now. And the civil rights movement in the United States American phenomenon has been understood in the light of American history and dealt with in terms of the American situation. But on another and more important level, what is happening in the United States today is a relatively small part of a world development. We live in a day, says the philosopher Alfred North Whitehead, and civilization is changing its basic outlook. A major turning point in history, where the presuppositions of society and structure are being analyzed and profoundly changed. What we are seeing now is the freedom of the realization of an idea whose time has come to use Victor Hugo's phrase. The deep rumbling of discontent that we hear today is a thunder of disinherited mass rising from dungeons of oppression to the bright hills of freedom. In one majestic chorus, the rising masses are singing in the words of our freedom song, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn us around." All the world learned like a fever. The freedom movement is spreading in the widest liberation in history. The great masses of people are determined to end the exploitation of their races and their land. They are awake and moving toward their goal like a tidal wave. You can hear them rumbling in every village street, on the docks and the houses, amongst the students and churches, and at political meetings. Historic movement was for several centuries that of the nations and societies of Western Europe out into the rest of the world in conquest of various thoughts. That period, the era of colonialism, is at an end. East is meeting west. The earth is being redistributed. Yes, we are shifting our basic outlooks. Now these developments should not surprise the history. Oppressed people cannot remain oppressed forever. The yearning for freedom eventually manifests itself. The Bible tells a thrilling story. How Moses stood in Pharaoh's court central and cried, let my people go. This is a kind of thing that in a continuing world. The present struggle in the United States is a later chapter in the same unfolding story. Something within has reminded the Negro of his birthright of freedom. And something without him that it can be gained, consciously or unconsciously. He has been fought by the white guys. And with his black brothers of Africa, his brown and yellow brothers in Asia, South America, and the Caribbean, the United States Negro is moving with a sense of great urgency for the promised land of racial justice. Fortunately, some significant strides have been made in the struggle to end the long night of racial injustice. We have seen the magnificent drama of independence unfold in Asia and Africa. Just 30 years ago, there were only three independent nations in the whole of Africa. But today, 35 African nations have risen from the bondage. In the United States, we have witnessed the gradual demise of the system of racial segregation. The Supreme Court's decision of 1954, outlawing segregation in the public schools, gave a legal and constitutional death to the whole doctrine of segregation. The court decreed that separate facilities are inherently unequal. That segregation is to deny the law. This decision came as a great blight to millions of disinherited people. Then came that blowing day a few months ago when a strong civil rights bill became the law of the land. This bill, which was first recommended and promoted by President Kennedy, was passed because of the overwhelming support and perseverance
and what Dr. King is talking about is how Dr. King is talking to himself 5 years ago that's happening right now.
From millions of Americans, Negro and white, it came as a bright interlude in the long and sometimes turbulent struggle for civil rights, the beginning of a second emancipation proclamation, providing a comprehensive legal basis for equality of opportunity. Since the passage of this bill, we have seen some encouraging and surprising signs of compliance.
I'm happy to report that large
communities all over the southern part of the United States are obeying the civil rights law, enjoying remarkable success in the process. Another indication that progress is being made was found in the recent presidential election in the United States. The American people revealed great maturity by overwhelmingly rejecting a presidential candidate who had become identified with extremism, racism, and retrogression. The voters of our nation rendered a telling blow to the radical right. They defeated those elements in our society which seek to pit white against Negro and lead the nation down a dangerous fascist path. Now let me not leave you with a false impression. The problem is far from
we still have
a long way to go before we can reality for the Negro in the United States. To put it figuratively in biblical language, we have left the dusty soils of Egypt, crossed the Red Sea, whose waters have for years been hardened by a long and piercing winter. But before we reach some majestic shores of the promised, that is a frustrating and bewildering wilderness ahead.
We must still face
prodigious hills of opposition and gigantic mountains of resistance. But with patient and firm determination, we will press on until every valley of despair is exalted to the peaks of hope. Until every mountain of pride and irrationality made low by the lifting process of humility and compassion, until the rough places of injustice are transformed into a
plain equality of
humanity, until the crooked spaces of prejudice are transformed by the straightened process
of bright-eyed wisdom.
What the main sections of the civil rights movement in the United States of America, that demand equality, justice, and citizenship will not be abandoned or diluted or postponed.
That means
resistance and conflict. We shall not flinch. We shall not be cowed.
We are no longer afraid. Words symbolize the spirit and the outward form of the power and shelter is nonviolent. It is not that to award a peace prize to one identified with struggle. Broad speaking, nonviolence in the civil rights struggle has meant not relying on arms and weapons to struggle. It has meant non-cooperation with customs and laws, which are institutional aspects of a regime of discrimination and enslavement. It has meant direct participation of masses in protest, rather than relying on indirect methods, which frequently do not involve masses in action at all. Nonviolence has also meant that my people in the agonizing struggles of recent years have taken suffering upon themselves instead of inflicting it on others. It has meant, as I said, that we are no longer afraid and cowed. But in some substantial degree, it has meant that we do not want to instill fear in others or into the society of which we are a part. The movement does not seek to liberate Negroes at the expense of the humiliation and enslavement of whites. It seeks no victory over anyone. It seeks to liberate American society and to share in the self-liberation of all people. Violence as a way of achieving racial justice is, I am convinced, both impractical and immoral. I'm not mindful of the fact that violence brings about momentary results. Nations have frequently won their independence in battle. In spite of temporary victories, violence never brings a permanent peace. It solves no social problems. Violence is impractical because it is a descending spiral, ending in destruction for all. It is immoral because it is humiliating rather than win his understanding. It seeks to annihilate. It destroys community and makes brotherhood impossible. It leaves society all over the world. Violence ends up defeating itself. It creates bitterness in the survivors, the brutality in the destroyer. In a real sense, nonviolence seeks to relieve spiritual and moral law. I spoke of her as teaching the modern man. It seeks to secure through moral means. Nonviolence is a powerful and awesome weapon. Indeed, it is a weapon used in history, which cuts without wound, and ennobles the man who wills it. I believe in this method. Because I think it is for you to broken community. It is a matter which seeks to limit the trust in all by filling the conscience
of the great recent majority,
who through blindness, fear, pride, and irrationality have allowed their consciences to sleep. Nonviolent sisters can summarize their message in the following simple terms. We will take direct action against injustice. Despite the failure of governmental and other official agencies to act first, we will not obey unjust laws
or submit to unjust practices.
We will do this peacefully, openly, and cheerfully, because our aim is to persuade. We adopt the means of nonviolence because our end is the community and peace with itself.
We we will try to persuade with our words. But if our words fail, we will try to persuade with our actions. We will always be willing to talk and seek back compromise. We are ready to suffer when necessary, and even risk our lives in order to become witnesses to truth as we see it. This approach to the problem is not at all without successful precedent. It was used in a magnificent way by the British Empire to free its people from the political domination, economic exploitation inflicted upon them. He struggled only with the weapons of truth, soul force, non-injury, and courage. In the past, unarmed, gallant men and women of the United States have given living testimony to the moral power and efficacy of nonviolence. By the thousands, faceless, anonymous, relentless young black and white, have temporarily left the ivory towers of learning, stormed the barricades of violence, decorations and discipline activity, have come as a refreshing oasis in a desert swelling. They have taken our own nation back. In the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, one day all of America will be proud of that achievement. Only too well aware of the human weaknesses and failures which exist, the doubt about the efficacy of nonviolence, the open advocacy of violence by some, but I am still convinced that nonviolence is both the most practically sound and morally excellent way to grapple with the age-old problem of mid-range justice. A second evil which plagues the modern world is that of poverty. Like a monstrous octopus, It projects snag and prehensile tentacles in lands and villages all over the world. Almost two-thirds of the people of the world go to bed hungry at night. They are undernourished, ill-housed, and scabbed. Many of them have no houses or beds to sleep in. They're on their beds for the sidewalks of the cities and the dusty roads of the villages. Most of these poverty-stricken children of God have never seen a physician or a physician. This problem is not only seen in the class division between the highly developed industrial nations, the so-called underdeveloped nations. It is seen in the great economic gap between the rich nations themselves. Take my own country, for example. We have developed the greatest system of production
that history has ever known.
We have become the richest nation in the world.
Our national gross product
this year will reach the astounding figure of almost $650.
Yet at least one fifth of our citizens, some 10 million families,
comprised about 40 million individuals, are bound to a miserable culture of poverty. In a sense, the poverty of the poor in America is more frustrating than the poverty of Africa and Asia.
The misery of the poor in Africa and Asia
is shared misery. A fact of life for the vast majority. They are all poor together as a result of years of exploitation and underdevelopment. In sad contrast,
The poor in America know that they live in the richest nation in the world. But even though they are perishing on a lonely island of poverty, they are surrounded by the vast ocean of material prosperity. Listening powers of glass and steel, usually seen from their slum dwellings, seeing almost night. Jet liners speed over their ghettos, 600 miles an hour. Satellites throughout our space and reveal details. President Johnson, in his State of the Union message, emphasized this contradiction. He heralded the United States' highest standard of living in the world, deplored that it was accompanied by dislocation, loss of jobs, and the effect of poverty in the midst of plenty. So it is often that man receives his real and moral respect. He must go all out to bridge the social and economic gulf between the haves and the have-nots of the world. Poverty is one of the most urgent items on the agenda of the modern life. That is nothing new about poverty. What is new, however, that we have resources to get rid of it. More than a century and a half ago, people began to be disturbed about the twin problems of population and production. A thoughtful Englishman, Malthus, wrote a book that set forth some rather frightening conclusions. He predicted that the human family would bring forth global population. Because the world was producing people faster than it was producing food and material to support them. Later science, however, disproved the conclusions of Malthus and revealed that he had the resources of the world and the resourcefulness of man. Not too many years ago, Dr. Matthew Hoffman, theologian, wrote a book entitled Nothing But Bad. He set forth the basic theme that famine is wholly unnecessary in the world. Therefore, the question on the agenda must be, why should there be hunger and privation in any land, in any city, at any table? Man has the resources and the scientific know-how to provide all mankind with the basic necessities of life. Even deserts can be irrigated. Topsoil can be replaced. We cannot complain of a lack of land. There are 25 million square miles of tillable land, which is less than 7 million. We have amazing knowledge of vitamins, nutrition, the chemistry of food, and the versatility of atoms. There is no deficit in human resources. The deficit is in human will. Well-off and the secure have too often become indifferent and oblivious of poverty and deprivation and death. Poor in our countries have been shut out of our minds, driven from the mainstream of our society. Because we have allowed them to become invisible. Just as nonviolence exposed the ugliness of racial injustice, so must be in the infection and sickness of poverty be exposed and healed, not only its symptoms, but its basic causes. This, too, will be a fierce struggle. We must not be afraid to pursue the remedy, no matter how formidable the task. Time has come for all our war against poverty. The rich nations must use their vast resources to develop the undeveloped, school the unhungry, and feed the unfed. Ultimately, a great nation is a compassionate nation. No individual nation can be great if it does not have a concern for the least of these, deeply etched in the fiber of our religious tradition, is the conviction that men are made in the image of God. They have the validity of dignity and worth. We feel this as a profound moral fact. We cannot be content to see men hungry, to see men victimized of starvation and ill health, and we have the means to help them. The wealthy nations must go all out to bring the wealth between the rich minority and the poor majority. In the final analysis, the rich must not ignore the poor, because both rich and poor are tied together in a single form of destiny. All life is interrelated. All men are interdependent. The agony of the poor diminishes the risk, and the salvation of the poor the risk. We are inevitably our brothers and sisters because of the interrelated structure of reality. John Donne interpreting this truth in graphic terms, when he affirmed no man is an island inside of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Far be washed away by the sea, Europe is a land of a promontory world. Well, as in the minority of thy friends of thine own self were, any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind. Therefore never sin to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. A third great evil confronting our world is that of war. Recent events have been vividly reminded that nations
are not Christian, but rather in peace.
They are those of the weapons of mass destruction. The best brains in the highly developed nations of the world devoted to military technology. The proliferation of nuclear weapons has not been halted in spite of limited. On the contrary, the detonation of an atomic device
by the first non-Russian
and so-called underdeveloped namely the Chinese People's Republic, opens new vistas of exposure, a vast multitude, a whole to insidious terrorization by the ever-present threat of annihilation. The fact that most of the time human beings put the truth about the nature and risk of the nuclear war out of their minds because it is too painful and therefore not acceptable, does not alter the nature and risk of such a war. The device may temporarily cover up inside, but it does not restore people's mind and emotional security. Though man's proneness to an engaging war is still a fact, wisdom born of experience should tell us that war is obsolete. There may have been a time when war served as a negative good by preventing the spread and growth of evil wars. But the destructive power of modern weapons
eliminates even the possibility that war may serve as a negative good.
We assume that life is worth living, that man has a right to life. Then we must find an alternative to war. In a day when vehicles of federal army face and guided ballistic missiles
are by weapons of death to destruction,
no nation can claim victory or so-called limited war with deep war and a calamitous legacy of human suffering, political turmoil, a world war, God forbid. Leave only smoldering ashes as a mere testimony of the human race
inexorably, no moment of death.
For my man's name
man continues to work unhesitatingly for.
He will transform his earthly habitat into an inferno such as even the mind of God could not imagine. Therefore, I venture to suggest to all of you
and all of you, that the philosophy and strategy of nonviolence become immediately
a subject for serious experimentation in every field of human conflict,
by no means
excluding the relations between nations.
It is, after all, nations made war, which are producing weapons which threaten the survival of mankind,
which are both genocidal and suicidal in character. Here also we have ancient habits to deal with, vast structures of power, indescribably complicated problems to solve. Unless we abdicate our humanity altogether and succumb to fear and importance in the presence of the weapons we have ourselves created, it is imperative and urgent to put an end to war and violence between nations, as it is to put an end to racial injustice. Equality with whites will hardly solve the problems of either whites or Negroes if it means equality in a society under the spell of terror and the terror doomed to extinction.
I do not wish to minimize
the complexities, the problems that need to be faced in achieving disarmament and peace. But I think it is a fact that we don't have the will, the courage, and the insight to deal with matters
less than this fear.
We are prepared to undergo a mental and spiritual re-evaluation, a change of focus, which will enable us to see that the things we see most really powerful are indeed not unreal and have come under the sentence of death.
We need to make a
supreme effort to generate the readiness, indeed the eagerness, to enter into the new world which is now coming. The city which hath foundation, whose building men make this God. We will not build a peaceful world
by following the negative path.
It is not enough to say we must not wage war. It is necessary to love peace and sacrifice for it.
We must concentrate not only on the negative expulsion of war,
but on the positive affirmation of peace. That is a fascinating little story that is preserved for us in Greek literature about Ulysses and the Sirens.
The sirens had the ability to sail of their eyes.
Many ships were heard upon the rocks. Men forgotten to be in. They flung themselves into the sea to become embraced by arms that drew them down to death. Ulysses determined not to be lured by the siren. First decided to tie himself tightly to the mast of the boat, and his crew stuck their ears with wax. Finally, he and his crew learned a better way to save themselves. They took on board the beautiful singer Orpheus,
whose melodies were sweeter than the music of the sirens. When all sang, who listened to the sirens.
So we must fix our vision not merely on the negative approach of the war, but upon the positive application of peace. We must see the peace represented with the music,
a cosmic melody that was part of the music of the war. Somehow,
the negative
which no one wants to a positive contest to harness.
house man for the purpose of making peace for spirit. In reality, all the
nations of the world assume that life is worth living.
The man has the right to survive.
Then we must find that this means that more and more our loyalty must become infinite rather than protection.
We must now get an overriding loyal man
as a whole.
In order to preserve the best in our
individual societies, this calls for the worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond our race, class, and nation. In reality, it calls for an unconditional love for all men.
This misunderstood, misinterpreted process. So readily dismissed by the nature of the world as a weak and cowardly force,
now becoming an absolute necessity for the survival of man.
When I speak of love, I'm not speaking of something that was
and weak respond.
Assume that life is worth living, that man has a right to survive.
Then we must find an alternative to the world.
In a day of peace, guided ballistic missiles,
no nation can claim victory in war.
So-called limited war will leave little more than a calamitous legacy of human suffering, political turmoil, and political disillusion.
America finds himself living in a triple ghetto.
We are seeking to make America one nation, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Now let me say that the struggle for America one is much more difficult than 5 or 10 years ago. For about a decade, maybe 12 years, we struggled all across the world to get rid of legal immigration and all the humiliation that surrounded that system of creation. And this was a struggle. It was not so we could not make use of public accommodation. Public transportation was segregated. All of them had dissidents back and transportation within cities, we often had to stand over empty seats because sections were reserved for white men. We did not have the right to vote in so many areas of the South. The struggle was to deal with these problems. Certainly they were difficult problems. They were humiliating conditions. By the thousands, we protested. We made it clear that it was ultimately honorable to accept jail experience and accept segregation and humiliation. By the thousands, students and adults decided to sit in at segregated lunch counters to protest conditions bad. When they were sitting at lunch counters, they were in reality standing up for the best American dream, seeking to take the whole nation back to those great wells of democracy, which are being deep in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Many things were changed as a result of these years of struggle. 1964, the Civil Rights Bill came into being. After the Birmingham movement, which did a great deal of Difficult and painful way in Chicago over the last year where I lived.
morally and even financially what we were doing in Birmingham and Selma. So really, I'm afraid against the extremist behavior of rather than
believing in genuine equality for Negroes.
Tragedy of racism because it's ultimate logic is genocide.
one says that I'm not good enough to live next door to him, if one says that I'm not good enough to eat at a lunchtime, or to have a good, decent job, or to go to school with him merely because of my race, he is saying consciously or unconsciously,